Blog Talk Radio.
We've got film, and we've got psychology. When we put the two together, we've got filmcology. Each week, we will look at the psychology of the characters in film, and it gives us something lovely to think about. So, let's get started. Filmcology is now.
Hi, everybody. I have to say, this is just such a cool movie to me. And quite honestly, it's one of those top 10 movies for spooksters, for really big-time directors, even like Martin Scorsese said. It's one of the top 11 frightening movies that he has on his, you know, frightful movie list. The director, which you guys probably all, well, you may not know, his name is Robert Wise. He's a very famous director. He's the one who did West Side Story. Yeah. So anyway, he was saying that he got the idea from reading Shirley Jackson's book while he was making West Side Story. He made a whole bunch of other films too. But while he was making the film West Side Story, he said, he was making a film, and he said he got the idea to make this because he was doing the pre-production for West Side Story, and while he was reading Shirley Jackson's book during one of the really scary passages, he said the guy who actually wrote the screenplay for him, his name is Nelson Ginning, he burst through the door to ask him a question. He said he literally jumped about 3 feet out of his chair. He thought to himself, if that book can do that to me just sitting and reading, it ought to be really fabulous if we make a picture out of it. Okay, this movie, when you first see the very beginning of The Haunting, it's this incredible building silhouetted against a really foreboding, dark, cloudy sky. And that just already kind of gives you some kind of idea of what's getting ready to happen. And it is stated in the very beginning, the guy who plays Mark Way, the actor, he's doing part of the beginning narrative, and he's saying that a haunted house is like an unexplored country. And if you think about it, this is sort of like a movie everybody who's in some kind of paranormal investigation ought to watch, in my opinion, because basically all these different phenomena are taking place, and you see the doctor who's actually in the film, he's one of the main characters. He's an anthropologist, so things are happening, and he will, like, pull out his notebook and start writing things down, which, in my opinion, I think a good paranormal investigator has pad and paper somewhere in their pocket, and no, I am not a paranormal investigator, but if you think about all the different things that could happen if you're on an investigation, maybe you're going to be taping it or filming it, but sometimes there are things that, there's so much going on that you may not even remember every single little thing. So I know that when I've seen things like Ghost Hunters back in the day when it was the old type, things like that, there's other shows that are also quite notable with paranormal investigations, such as there's a movie, I think her name is Kim Rhodes. I can't remember her last name, but anyway, she's a medium, and she helps people who have experienced hauntings in certain places, mostly these celebrity types, and she goes in there, and she talks to them about what's going on and the different spirits that come in, and the name of that show is called The Haunting Of, and then she'll put the person's name, Barry Bostwick whoever, some celebrity that you might have seen on Celebrity Ghost Stories, which is sort of helps to validate the celebrity ghost stories. But what's very interesting is how she goes through the house and all the different things that happen. It really reminds me of this movie, because in this movie, there's sort of what, I guess, like our ghost hunters, they would talk about intelligent hauntings, because the ghosts or the spirits are interacting with live people in a targeted and meaningful way to them as whoever that person is. And yes, this, I'm not talking about, I'm really not going into paranormal investigations, but if you are into paranormal investigations, good movie for you to watch. You know, this movie was made way back in 1962, 1963. So this isn't, let's see, what is it? You know, Fly By Night just started yesterday, Paranormal Investigation Group. So it tells you something about the mind of Shirley Jackson that came up with this old story about the type of energies that exist in homes that are much more than just the people living in them. So, but the people living in these homes have something to do often with these type of hauntings. One of the things that Shirley Jackson wrote when she wrote this film is she really basically is intimating that the house was born evil, quote, quote. You even hear that in the film. They believe the house is born evil. And all throughout the film, it's just, the darkness has more to do with human interactive issues. So, getting back to the beginning of the film, let's see. When you first see the very beginning of the film, it talks about this Hugh Crane person who's bringing his wife to this house that he had built for her and his daughter. And before his wife even laid eyes, as they said, on the house, the horses in the carriage that was carrying them, they reared up and they had some issue because of obviously the evil energy, and his wife was smashed into a tree and died before she even got a chance to go in or be in the house. And then he transported her dead body into the house and became this embittered man, and he even forced his daughter to stand there while his wife's dead body was in wait, and you could see the little girl with tears in her eyes, and she wanted to look away, but her father made her stare at the dead body while he read, I believe, out of the Bible. But he just became a hardened man, is what they're trying to tell us. But there's other things in the film that make you think that maybe he was just a hardened, creepy kind of guy ahead of time. It's really hard to tell the way things are portrayed in the film, but probably because of the time they have for the film. So then this man gets another wife, and she somehow gets knocked or thrown down the stairs, and she dies. So then the man has this little girl that he's trying to raise alone, and he ends up leaving her in the home, and he goes to Paris or Europe somewhere, and he ends up dying. He drowns there. So the little girl is she just grows up in this house, sort of shut in with these books that this man wrote about the sort of fire and brimstone cautionary tale of lust and things that will ruin your life, and you know, just really heavy, almost Quaker-like admonishments to this little girl, which she was basically snowed under. And they tell you in the very beginning she stayed in the same little nursery that she grew up in. That's the room that she stayed in to the day she died. Well, just before she died, she had some woman as a caretaker. I know we're going to talk about caretakers in a minute, the psychology behind that. The caretakers the caretaker, a young woman from the town, she would sit there and tend to the woman, but one day she just felt she had to get her freak on, so she went down somewhere away from the old woman's room, and she's making out with, I don't know, the hired help, the gardener, some, I don't know, ne'er-do-well kind of person. And there's a lot of things I'm going to say about this with caretakers. But anyway, when the woman was banging on the wall, the old lady, she needed something. She banged and banged and banged, and this caretaker did not come back. Because she was, you know, she's busy getting her freak on, and the old woman died. So then the house was left to this caretaker, who I don't know if it was guilt or whatever's going on in the house, but whatever happened, she ended up hanging herself in the library. And the house was left empty for years, and it was left to a very distant relative. And this is how it brings us to the today, or back in 1963, today, time where this house is a woman who was left as an older woman, and this Dr. Mark Way, the anthropologist, he wants to study while he's on leave from school. He's a teacher, a professor. He wants to study a real tried and true haunted house. So he's like a little boy in the candy store. He cannot wait. And she allows him to go there for 2 weeks, a set 2 weeks, lease to study this place as long as he takes her nephew, an heir, to her fortunes and that particular house. He thinks it's going to be a moneymaker because it's a gigantic mansion place. Now, let me pop on over real quickly about this house. If you've seen the movie, it is an actual building. The outside that we see is an actual building, this house. And the building is called Eddington Park. Now, let me see. Eddington Park Hotel, it's in Stratford. Is it Avon something? Warwickshire. So it's over in the United Kingdom. And you can actually stay at this lovely updated hotel that used to be owned by or leased to one family for 80 years. And then their son came along and leased it for another 100 years. And so the house kind of went through all this kind of stuff. It's had a lot of renovations and things like that. And then they turned it into a hotel. And if you go and take a look at Eddington Park Hotel online, you'll see that the inside of this place is very beautiful. The inside had nothing to do with what we saw inside the film. That was all on a stage. But all the creepy looking, the nursery and the different places, the library that we looked at, that's all fictionalized. But the outside of the hotel, which, you know, and the gallery at the hotel, is much, much prettier. It doesn't seem as foreboding as we see in this film, of course, that they use black and white shadows to make it seem creepy. Now, two of the main characters, when they were doing the outside filming sequences, Claire Bloom and Julie Harris. So those two, when they were filming the outside sequences, they actually stayed at the hotel. They were fearful of even going into the hotel, even though it looks obviously a lot nicer than in the film. They just felt that the outside exterior was terrifying. So in real life, they thought it was terrifying. I mean, it's hard to say because we're looking at a nice little screen, or maybe you saw it at a big theater back in 1963. It was released in September of 63, about, you know, almost 5 months, five, three, 4 months after I was born. But I can see how it would be a little intimidating. I mean, that's the best I can say. I think it's so pretty in the pictures that it's hard for me to... I'm glad that I never saw the hotel pictures before I saw the movie, because I'd have a completely different perspective. And hotel movies like the Stanley, that we have The Shining, things like that, and The Overlook, that's over actually... In The Shining, the hotel that they actually used for the external sequences, and also the inside sequences was Mount Hood in Oregon, even though basically it was the real story of The Shining was written at Estes Park in Colorado at the Stanley, which is documented haunted, and many of people have gone there and experienced it. I'm still planning on going to the Stanley. I got a soft spot in my heart for it, but it's just the point I was trying to make, and I know I'm going to make it, that these exteriors and interiors and things like that, you get this sort of mythology that starts to go on with these different places. And like I said, right now they have paranormal groups that have gone through the Eddington Park Hotel, and they've talked about it being haunted. There's all haunted. There's all kinds of reports about it being haunted. So I don't know if it's just time. I don't know if it's just our... the power of our suggestion, which I think is generally pretty big. It's all wrapped up in there. Or, you know, there's a lot of spirits that are sort of like, what the heck, you know? I like this place. I'm not going. And maybe the way people pick their toenails or something at the end of the bed just doesn't sit right with them. I don't know. But anyway, beyond the sort of comedic stuff of that, let's move on to some of the big things about this film. The very beginning, the whole caretaker sequence, this is huge from a psychological perspective, because people who do the caretaking in or caregiving in the home for other people is not easy. Some of the numbers that I came up with are, oh my goodness, the numbers are huge as far as what people have to, but when it comes to caretaking, there's something like 52 million people in America that are involved with home or familial caregiving. It's a really stressful and hard thing to do, even if you love them to death. I mean, well, okay, bad sentence, but even if you just love them more than anything, it's still difficult because of all the hard work that you have to do. It's not like somebody's walking in and saying, you're just the greatest because you're taking care. If you come from a family of siblings and one is taking care of the either parents or an old aunt or a sibling, somehow, it just seems that the people who are the caretakers almost always get sort of subjugated in some negative way. It's almost as if, okay, you're doing this thankless job, and we sort of look down on you for doing it, and even though we don't want to do it. I don't know what that's about, but it seems to have some weird interconnection psychologically. Now, according to the American Psychological Association, they're saying that most of the caregivers are female, who tend to have higher issues with depression and anxiety with it. And a lot of the caretakers have to work full time. So it's almost like you're being, you have all this full time, you could be working full time, then you still have to either come home, check in on things, or pay somebody when you're not there. Even if you pay someone to come in, as soon as you get home, the caretaking continues throughout the night till you go to work. And so people who are caretakers almost work 24 hours a day. And that's highlighted in the movie as Eleanor, the very main character of this film, she talked about just doing a game of solitaire in her room, and her mom would just bang and bang and bang on the walls, and as if she couldn't ever be away from her for even 5 minutes. So imagine you're in this life where you have a, well, really creepy. Her sister's creepy. I couldn't stand her sister. If I was a hatred type of person, I would probably have gone that direction. She was nasty. She taunted her sister, and she had actually spilled that over to her child, so that even her little daughter taunted her sister in this most horrific, disrespectful manner. And then her husband, who seemed to have some empathy for Eleanor, this really put upon, downtrodden young lady, her husband actually talked about how horrific it was for her to take care of her mother, who the husband actually indicates was a very mean old woman, although his wife immediately says, let's not talk bad about the dead. But it's okay to talk bad to the living. Creepy. So here's some more information about caretakers that you really need to think about when you're also watching this movie. If you've never, ever been a caretaker for anyone or had to deal with somebody who has gotten so old that they can't, you know, make it to the bathroom as easily, or they need to be bathed or fed or any of that, this may not really bother you at the deeper levels that somebody who is a, or has been a caretaker would. But let's see. They're saying that caretakers have some of these common signs and symptoms. If you've been a caretaker, I'll bet you probably have this. Anxiety, depression, and irritability. You often feel tired and run down. You have difficulty sleeping. Yeah, when somebody is always needing your care and you never know when they're going to need it, you never know if they're going to have incontinence. I did respite care one time when I was living in Oregon, and I just came in on the weekend to give the caretaker who was there all week time off on the weekend. And the woman had a heart attack. She was a woman, elderly woman, who was really active. She was one of those moms that like a Donna Reed, but super active. Her kids got to do this, that, or whatever. She took them fishing and horseback riding, all these things. Her sons, you know, she's the kind of mom that played baseball and all those things. All the way through her elderly years, she was just this great mom. I mean, I found out because I talked to her son quite a bit and his partner. And so they just loved her. And then she had a stroke. And she just couldn't express herself. Her facial expressions were pretty much gone. And you just sort of had to get to know some of her actions just to sort of think, that, okay, she's liking this or not liking it. But the woman who I was taking over for, she complained all the time. She had a lot of these signs. She'd go on and on about, oh, she's probably going to wet the bed, and, you know, be careful, she'll have diarrhea, and da da da. And she said, just don't let her have anything to drink at night, and, you know, just cover it up. I mean, she'll be a little wet, but don't worry about it. Just change the bed the next day. I there's no way I could have done that. So in the middle of the night, I would check on her all the time. I didn't, for 2 days, I basically didn't sleep because I would nod off here and there, but as soon as I started to nod off, I would go check on her. And one time, I heard her make a utterance, and she had wet herself in the bed. And she was just so agitated. It was the most animated I'd ever seen her. And I got her up, and I got her to the toilet. I think that she, and yes, I know, I'm talking about the unpleasant stuff. I think she started to have some diarrhea then. I totally changed the whole bed, changed her whole, all of her stuff, because the whole thought, it's like, I don't want to wet myself and then have to just roll over and be careful not to roll over. And she doesn't even have the same kind of reaction and movement abilities. But somebody who's a caretaker all the time gets there. And it's not because I think that woman wanted to be mean and nasty. I just think she was burnt out. One of the things they said is people who are caregivers they start feeling increasingly resentful. They might start drinking or smoking or eating more, gaining weight. They start neglecting their other responsibilities. They stop doing leisure things because it's like, when can you do it? And they tend to also have worsening health problems. It's really sad. I think the only way to get around this is to not have anybody do that for 5 days or more. I mean, really, you should have somebody that comes in like every 3 days. But, well, you know. Okay, so now that we've talked about caretakers, understanding that with Heal House, the little girl grew up in this house and, you know, old caretaker thing. And then here's Eleanor, who's going to this house where that took place after she spent most of her adult life caretaking her mother. And she actually admits that the time that her mom died, she kept banging on the walls and she didn't go in to see her. So now Eleanor has all these guilt feelings about not going in to take care of her mom. Add to that her creepy sister who insinuates that she basically killed her mom. And it's obviously been intimated to Eleanor and beaten into her to some extent. So now we're in this dark, foreboding house, and the characters come in. Eleanor, the meek and downtrodden, and then arrives Theo. Now let's talk about Theo. First thing you see about Theo is she walks in with the coolest, kick-ass-looking clothes. I mean, she was perfect. Her clothes were totally awesome. Sort of like, not really, sort of a leopard-looking kind of jacket, and she had on this cool leather hat that just sat on top of her wrapped up coiffed hair, and there was some kind of furry looking something around the collar. It's just, I know it was the 60s, but it was still, if you wore it today, you'd be the coolest cat out there, if you ask me. And she obviously had really awesome-looking clothes because all throughout this whole thing, everything she wore just looked extremely fashionable, not too Paris haute couture, but she was almost more fashion. She was a little more edgier fashion than probably an Audrey Hepburn. Who tended to be much more classic. And so there's a reason for the way they're portraying Theo the way that they are. Theo, in the book, in basically the reality is that character is a lesbian. And there's little hints that they try to give you about her being a lesbian in the film. There's a point at some time where Eleanor, who's so, you know, hasn't been anywhere, hasn't been in the world, obviously was sheltered from a lot of things, even, and it is 1963, she makes a comment about Theo being unnatural and having unnatural tendencies. That's to harken back to the lesbian lifestyle that Theo has. Theo, in the very beginning, she seems just really cool, but then it's hard to tell sometimes with Theo, the way she's portrayed by Claire Bloom, is she being serious? Is she being creepy? I've been rambling. Let me check to see if there's anyone calling you. I'm so sorry. And I'll pick you up here in a minute. I just want to get some of these things out. What I noticed in the very beginning is that Theo really wants to, it's real important for her to get attention. She's very feminine, though. She's not as terms that are out there, slang terms, butchy, or she's not looking manly. And one of the things they were talking about for this film is almost like they don't really recognize that lesbians would be really feminine and girly looking and enticing to women the way that, you know, women are supposed to be enticing to men. So there's a lot of gender throwback stuff going on that's obviously from a era long gone by than today's world. And Theo does talk about even living with somebody in her apartment, and she doesn't say what her sex is. She doesn't say, not her sex, what the sex of her, the person she lives with is. It's skirted. And it's skirted because of the quote-unquote censors in 1962. As a matter of fact, they said that Theo was not to touch Eleanor at all in the film, which actually happened a couple of times, and they must have missed it, because that's one of those things where back then they would change your ratings in a heartbeat. It's like, oh, you're making people think that this is taking place. So it was sort of, if you watched what goes on between Theo and Eleanor, both with their bedrooms being connected and things like that, and when they're sort of afraid and clinging together, you just sort of need to sort of watch that and then watch how Theo is with the two men in the film. There's one scene where Theo, where the young man, played by Russ Tamblyn from West Side Story, the young man actually touches Theo's necklace, and she reacts really violently, like, don't touch me. And everyone's like, okay, what's going on? But it's to try to get you to understand she didn't want anything to do with men, you know, without saying she's a lesbian. Okay, so these kind of things, all these little weird interplays are going on while this, and these entities or whatever kind of entities that are going on in this film are wreaking havoc in weird ways. Like, they play the harp. If you're not paying attention, you just think it's sort of mood music, but it's not. And then Dr. Markaway would write something down like, you know, I get such and such, the harp was strummed or something like that. The other thing is the first big creepiness that we get outside of just the facade of the building is the ladies are in their respective bedrooms, and then they hear this gigantic, enormous banging that's sort of like walking, but it's like hitting all the walls of the whole building. It's loud and unexpected. It's something about black and white films that seem a little more clean when it comes to sound. You don't normally expect a whole lot of mood music, and you get mood music, but you don't think of the din of traffic and all that other kind of stuff. It's almost like a snowy day. When there's a black and white film, it's kind of like a snowy day where everything seems quieter. So it made it even more striking and frightening when that bang started happening. They ended up in the same room together, just terrified, while the guys are somewhere else out in the film, who knows where. So anyway, I'm going to bring someone else on, and we're going to, if there's somebody there, I'm sorry, I have to actually get through all my notes and everything, the caretakers and everything, and if you have any questions, I think I could answer. Oh, there's a few people on here. Okay, hold on. I'm going to go ahead and bring you on. If you don't want to talk, just let us know. If you want to talk, you can jump right in after I unmute you. Give me your ideas about things. Hello, and you're on with Filmcology. How you doing?
Hi, is it for me?
Yeah, there's a couple. Okay, there's 303 and there's a 253.
Yeah.
Hi.
Okay. Hi, Brenda. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Very good.
Yeah, you just said so, didn't you? Did you get a chance to catch it, or are you going
really
by, or recently, or did you caught it years ago, or read the book?
No, I actually just saw it today.
Pardon?
I just saw it today.
Ah, nice. Fresh kill. I love it. So
yeah, and it was creepy, and I probably watched more scary movies than I ever have in my whole life because of you.
Yeah, but they still have so much to tell us. You know, if you could get past the little jumps and stuff, they have so much to tell us. I mean, you've heard some of the things I was saying. Did you relate to any of the things I was saying about Hill House?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I want to go there now that I know where it is.
Oh, to the Eddington Park Hotel?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you live in Colorado. You've been to Stanley.
I sure have.
Yeah. But have you stayed overnight at Stanley?
No, I'm waiting for you to come visit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's got to happen. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I went in there with Mel, and I felt something. So I wouldn't doubt that there's something there.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm still, that's definitely a trip on my bucket list, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you think about Eleanor? I mean, she describes herself at one point when she's on her way to the house, she describes herself as homeless and she indicates that she's basically running away. What did you think about her, where she's coming from?
I felt, well, that she was a really tragic character made me very sad. But yet she, you know, she did grow a pair when she, you know, took the car and left and kicked them out of their house, of the house. I thought that was really good. But,
yeah.
You know, it's like she was driven. She was really, it was like, you know, destiny or something. But I just kept thinking there would be something else. I was thinking that possibly, you know, but I'm used to maybe more modern horror stories. I kept thinking that it was a ruse that her sister and brother-in-law were playing to get everything, you know, to try to drive her.
Interesting. Yeah. I took it more as the more like regular reality that people are just this creepy when to caretakers, and it's really disturbing. I mean, my sister used to do special things with my great grandmother. She would go get my great-grandmother from the nursing home, and she would bring her home to stay with her in her apartment. Well, my sister, I don't think she always sort of gets what's helpful to everybody. I think she was just thinking in terms of, I think she just wanted to keep Mama, she just didn't like having Mama Lenny, my great-grandmother, in the nursing home. And I understand that part behind why she would do the things she would do, but at one time, my great-grandmother actually, you know, she wet the bed, and my sister was frustrated about that. My great-grandmother, it was harder for her to get into lower cars because her knees and her joints weren't as easy. And so she would kind of complain to me about that it was like Cheryl's car was so low. She had an old Toyota . And then my sister would complain because my great-grandmother would always talk about me or my brother David. And just, she said, I'm the one you know, taking her to get new underwear and new clothes, and all she talks about is you and David. And, well, I said, Cheryl, that's not, it's not because she doesn't appreciate what you're doing. It's just she misses us. And I, you know, I just didn't have, unfortunately, the time to go. I didn't even have a kind of situation where I could have her come stay with me. And I don't think that it was probably that appropriate unless she was going to take care of my great-grandmother all the time, which
right.
neither of us had the finances at the time to do. We talked about it. My sister and I talked about it all the time. We were trying to figure out if we could just, so we were working several jobs. If we could work enough jobs, then we could maybe tag team and have my grandfather, my dad's dad, and my great-grandmother, Mama Lenny, we were thinking we could have them stay in the same place, and we would just keep, we had these great plans. But, you know, it just wasn't to be. And I don't, it might have turned into a bigger disaster. I have no idea. But it never
yeah.
happened. And so I know that my sister felt really bad about it. And I felt bad for her. But people who are in a position of being taken care of, they have their own sort of tragic side of it. You know, most of the time we're not thinking about the fact that they don't really want to be taken care of, that they're
right.
grieving the fact that they can't get around as well as they want to. My great-grandmother would just be, she never wanted to bother anybody. So then when she needed to go to the restroom, it was a big to-do because she can't move as well. And I experienced that one time in her nursing home, and she's like, come on, kid, children. She's like, I hurry, you know, and she was so upset because we just barely made it to the bathroom. And so there's a whole lot of stuff going on. And when I think about this movie from the psychological perspectives of what's going on, all these tragedies in each faction, it is not
mm-hmm.
surprising that there's spirits resentful or upset or, you know, in huge ways in this house.
Yeah.
Because everybody's so unhappy, let alone a little girl that is stuck in a house her entire life
yeah.
without her parents and dies there.
Yeah.
Sad. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you think about Eleanor falling for the doctor?
Well, that's obvious. She never, ever had any, I mean, he was cute. He had an accent. I mean, what's not to like? And he was sympathetic to her. He was sympathetic to her. You know, when they
right.
were on the staircase and he touched her face, I was like, what's he doing? Why is he doing it? I mean, was he doing it out of kindness? Did he have the hots for her?
I think he felt something for her. I think that they try to indicate that because he does sort of favor Eleanor in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
Theo was like psychic extraordinaire. I mean, this
oh,
another
yeah.
thing that this film really points out is just how strong her psychic abilities were. When she first even comes in, she starts calling her by her familiar name. And, you know, why don't you go change into your new clothes? And how did you know that? And she would always put it in a terms of, well, you know, it's just perception. Like, I myself find it hard to discern whether the things that I figure out from people is some kind of perception from psychology or if it's actually what comes into my mind is just a psychic. Sometimes it's really hard for me to discern, but it comes however it comes. Theo, she made a comment in the very beginning when Eleanor said, oh, she says, I know we're going to be great friends. And Theo says, yeah, like sisters. And she says it in a questioning way. And I believe she was pointing out that, you know, how creepy her sister was. And Eleanor, of course, kind of glosses over it. But she brings up the sisters thing later. And I think that's also wrapped up in the lesbian part because in the book, there's an overture in the book towards Eleanor romantically from Theo, which, you know, back then was considered inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You could just see Eleanor freaking out from that, so. So.
Yeah. Eleanor was very fragile.
Yeah, she was and she was losing it.
Mm-hmm.
She was totally losing it after the first night. She was just
mm-hmm.
coming apart at the seams. And yet I felt so bad for her because it's like she was, I think people who are caretakers for a long time do that. Their connection with reality starts to slip away. It gets, that
well,
because
it becomes, unless they do have outside contact, and I think the ones that stay at home all the time with no job, even though that's hard on you too, but I could see you slipping away because your whole world is this one person in the house.
Right, right. So the thoughts that she was having were, in my opinion, wow, just she was crystal clear about some things about the plays, and then she would sort of be in this really strange fantasy land about Dr. Mark Way and or how everybody are they, how they're thinking about her. When she started dancing around the statues, I was sort of like, okay. And even in the beginning when they first all meet to have dinner, and the young man walks in with a picture of martini, a mixed up martini. He's like, what's wrong? Too much vermouth? Oh, nothing as tragic as all that. Like, the most tragic thing that could happen in this house full of spirits that are hateful and weird and messed up is that you'd have too much vermouth in your martini, okay? They're all served a martini, and Eleanor's holding it as if she's going to drink it, and she's going on about, oh, I want to drink to us, as you know, because she so had no friends.
Right.
Very common for caretakers to have very little friendship, which
mm-hmm.
would support them to be able to feel better, right? But
right.
It keeps you so isolated. And so she says at one point, well, the trouble is that I don't drink. And it almost put all of them sort of like, oh, she's one of those. Like, it almost made her, it almost highlighted just how weird she was, because they sort of like almost embarrassingly just said nothing to it and went to their drinks. And
right.
She's just sort of sitting there with holding a martini. It's so weird and out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe you need a drink, honey.
Well, then she does later on.
Yeah, good green bowl of bourbon, and that would have fixed her right up.
Yeah.
Which I think I deserve tonight. But moving along. Any other things you would like to say about the film or that you found were weird or cool or different or whatever?
Well, I love black and white movies, and I think that it did lend itself to be more scary. And I would have loved to have seen it on the big screen. I think that it would have really scared the bejesus out of me.
Oh, yeah, and with all the lights off,
mm-hmm.
you know, like on a winter's night or so. I don't, because snow has its own scariness to it because of the quiet. But I totally agree.
Now, do you think that the spirits were really calling her? I mean, to me, it was the house was haunted, and they wanted her.
Yeah.
They wanted Eleanor.
I believe they
and
wanted
Eleanor
her.
Was so vulnerable that she, you know, she couldn't, she kind of wanted it too. She kind of wanted a release from all of it.
Yeah, there was a remake made in like 2005, which was horrible. Sorry. I don't normally give big, giant, you know, things, sweeping, you know, reviews of it. But that was just so horrible. And it had so many people I just adore what they're acting. Liam Neeson is an incredible, handsome, and he's really good. He was a great choice for Mark Way. And then Lily Taylor, she's just one of my absolute favorite actors, just one of my absolute favorites. But it's just whoever wrote it, it was a weird sort of didn't work. And they, in that film, they sort of were making out, they really played up the children thing, like there's all these trapped children spirits, and so they made Hugh Crane even more creepy. He did weird things, I guess, with the children. But in this film, Hugh Crane's just a really embittered man who lost obviously the love of his life. And he gets another wife. He's stuck with this, you know, young kid. And he's already embittered. He gets another woman, and then he loses that. And it just, like, he just had all these tragic things. And so in this film, the old one, they sort of just played up that he had this real bitter Quakerish mind that would have, you know, sort of messed up the little girl.
Right. So tell me, what year was this film made?
1963. It was released in September of 1963.
And when was Psycho released?
Psycho? I think it was released in 1962, but let me check real quick.
Mainly I'm saying that because I felt like when she was driving, I saw some similarities, and maybe it was just, you know, I think creativity flows, and I think sometimes several people will hit on the same idea because of the creativity around. And I really saw a little bit of Psycho in the driving sequence when she was driving.
Okay, well, the story for Psycho was written in 1959, and the movie was made, it was released in 1960. So quite possibly, the Shirley Jackson, she was sort of like this incredible writer who wrote these, you know, mysteries, you know, these great, great mysteries that, you know, they were able to turn into just, she wrote, no, see, it's interesting you would say that. The Haunting of Hill House was written in 1959, the same time that Psycho was written, 1959. Wow, you're good, girl. You're good.
Maybe it was.
I'm impressed.
Thanks. Maybe it was also that women were just starting to drive, so that was a big thing. I don't know. I don't really, you know, and driving alone, and I don't know, they both were kind of weird and out with their thoughts, and it smacked me like Psycho. It just, it was kind of like, oh, this is like Psycho. So
yeah,
that's all I have to say, but thanks for getting me to watch it. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, that, you know, it really was an era where women were starting to sort of gain some independence, and it really did sort of state that independence was sort of a bad thing for women in this film and also that film. In that film, Janet Leigh's character is having sex and having an affair, Afternoon Delight, with her boyfriend, who's still waiting on the divorce from his wife. And it's like, oh, bad, you know, no, bad. If you're not married, if you're not attached, then you're bad. And so, and then here's Eleanor, she's bad. And she's, you know, even, she's just, yeah. They use bad in different ways. You're either crazy or you're lesbian or, you know, no good can come out of a single woman in the world is the way that they sort of looked at things in that era. So, yeah, you're bringing up some great psychological points.
Well, another thing was, you know, I think maybe the doctor was loving on her or liking her, Eleanor, a lot, because his wife is not real supportive, you know, and she's like, let's put this all to rest, and, you know, and this is all, you know, and here, you know, he found someone in Eleanor that, even though she was extremely naive, that, you know, she would, you know, possibly believe it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was really interesting, the psychological interplays that were going on between Theo and Eleanor and between Theo in relation to the whole group and then also Eleanor and the whole group and then Eleanor in the house. Yes, in Markway. And it's almost like Markway seems sort of trapped in his situation. Eleanor seemed trapped. The one
right.
who seemed less trapped, of course, we have to make her bad, Theo. Even though she's so lovely, sexy, I think they deliberately played it so it was hard to figure out whether she was sort of dark or whether she was light. And then every once in a while it would be like, she's just teasing you, Eleanor, to help you not feel so bad, and because Eleanor was coming apart at the seams, anything you said to her was going to send her off the deep end. It
yeah.
was just, it was sad. But it was a really good film to watch. If you're a caretaker, if you're into paranormal investigations, it's definitely good. If you're a psychic, it's a good film for you to watch to think about. So anyway, as far as getting to the end of the film, I'll let you figure out what it is when you watch it. If you choose to watch the film, it's really good for the era it is, and everybody's performance was well done. It was really a good film. So, let's see. I think that we're pretty much out of time as far as the film. I don't know what any other last thoughts there are to say except go watch it. You could watch the 2005 one and, you know, call me whatever you want, but I'm telling you to just try to see this 1963 version. Okay, let's go ahead and get on to the shows that are coming up, folks. And tomorrow we have Friday's Traffic Jam. It's dedicated to Malcolm and Cameron, the grandsons of Nina. She's our manager for the Essence of Success Radio Network. That show is going to be in at 5 p.m. tomorrow Pacific time. And so they're supposed to, I believe Lennis is supposed to have some music for the younger sect.
I thought she said hip hop.
Well, not so much hip hop as Eminem and Katy Perry and a few others like that. So it's going to be a really great show, a lot of great music, and I'm sure the boys are going to enjoy it thoroughly.
I hope so. And then the next show will be on Saturday at 2 p.m. and that'll be Time to Love with Miss the lovely Lydia Pello. Funky to the Flow. Just the title in itself.
And I am going to take some time to. I am going to talk a little bit about the passing of one of my idols, one of my sisters, I want to say, Maya Angelou. I'm going to read some things by her and honor her, and then I'm going to talk from funky to flow. And funky being more like, you know, funky, you know, when you're just not moving forward. You got lead boots on, or you manage to take one step forward in your life, and then you get thrown back three, and things aren't working out. So, but then the opposite part, to flow, how do we get there? How do we get to flow? I'm finding this out for myself. Why do I always have to live what I'm talking about? That's what I want to know. Tune in at 2 o'clock, time to love.
I don't know. Maybe it's so that you can come on, you know, time to love and, you know, tell us what it's all about.
That I'm sure. We teach best
okay.
what we need to know, folks.
Funky to flow. I love it. Okay, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific time. And then on Sunday, Lennis has done a switcheroo with her show, her programming, and the psychic readings are now going to be on Sunday at 3 p.m. and for an hour. And she still has this great deal where if you're the ninth call, every ninth caller, she said, will get a free psychic reading for an hour, which is worth $60. And she's really good, folks. Trust me, she's really good. There, she could tell you things that you're just going to be shocked that she's got it. Go ahead and call in on Sunday at 3 p.m. Then that takes us to Monday at 8 p.m. I'm going to be doing LNB, Passage to Empowerment, and the show is The Challenge Celebration. We've had 21 days of working on our challenges, different challenges, walking, eating, less sugar, more sugar, whatever. You're either releasing a habit or you're building a habit. 21 days helps you to solidify that. And we'll be talking about all of our different challenges and anybody else who wants to call in and share how they've done and also where we go from there. So that'll be a great show. And don't forget to bring your champagne or whatever it is that you like to celebrate with, whether it's lemonade, water, or vermouth, whatever it is. Yeah, join us at 8 p.m. on Monday with Lydia, Nina, and Brenda. Okay, the next show is Tuesday, and that's at 6 p.m., and that's the BYO Brilliance, the Brilliance of Tapping Yourself Healthy. Now, the reason I actually chose that is because near as everything, the information that I keep getting is this emotional freedom technique, EFT, or tapping. You can use it for all kinds of areas in your life, but it's a good idea to tune in or check out the link and look at just the basic techniques. There's even a video there to show you, and it's by a practitioner, and she's really good. So join us. Figure out how you can use tapping in your life to your highest good. Next show is the switcheroo, which is on Wednesday. At what time are we doing for her? Is she doing?
She's at 7 p.m. In the studio will be Wednesday at 7 p.m. with Lennis.
And she'll have hot topics, and that'll be Lennis and her producer, Chabonet. Kay, and I don't know if her other co-host, Renice, will be there, but I think Nina might be there.
Yes, I'll be there in the chat room.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'll be there. I'll be back to school, so I'm not sure. But working on a dissertation. But, join in, folks. It'll be real interesting to see the big switcheroo changes, and hopefully more of you can call in and get jiggy with Lennis and Chabonet and Nina and whoever else joins us. That brings us to next Thursday. And this is sort of a docudrama at 6 p.m. And next week's Filmcology is Philomena. This is a movie about a woman who had a child out of wedlock and how the church handled it back then in the 1950s, which was not, I'm not going to make any judgments, but it affected the lives of the baby and the mom in ways that were just surprising and a wee bit sad. So, okay. But, you know, it's really just watch it. Okay, Philomena, and if you go to the link, you'll see an interview with the real Philomena. It's a true story with some poetic license, but you see the real Philomena, and you can see she and Judy Dench, who plays her, information about them. So that'll do it, folks. That's Filmcology, Film Plus Psychology. And I thank you for joining me, whether you're in the archives and you're checking us out, or you're just on the internet or podcasting, or you're calling in and just listening. Thank you for joining us and listening to us. And I hope you get a chance to check out The Haunting, 1963. And you never know. There might be something in there that you could use in your life. If you have anything to do with caretakers or you know a caretaker, take some of this information and figure out a way to support your situation for the better. All right, everybody. Take care and have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye.
Good night.